Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Nina Rose Hatfield, Acting Director, Bureau of Land Management in the U.S. Department of Interior. Well, Nina, in the previous segment, you gave a description of a technology program that had a lot of issues and a lot of decisions were made. Could you tell us what the lessons learned from that were that others might learn from?
Well, I think very importantly to us was the fact that we just had to make the decision, in this case, if you will, to just say no, that we were not going to deploy this, that we were going to take the public heat of having spent $65 million without a deployable system. Now, and I think that's been well worth it, and it actually so shocked the organization that we really had trouble killing it inside. I mean, you know, we had these contractors that we were continuing. We had to say finally to our RM organization, we're not going to deploy this system. You need to get those contractors off the payroll. And, you know, even within our states, they just couldn't believe it. We were not going to deploy this system, and we had to keep communicating, we are not going to spend additional money on this system. We're going to go to where we need to be in terms of a modern system. And you got to keep in mind the goals for the system were fine, and we're still pursuing those goals, but we're doing it in a different way. And one of the problems we had with ALMRS was just the mission creep in terms of what we tried to do. And I think our real purpose in having an investment board is that the investment board approves a project and they track the project to make sure that it's not getting into mission creep. If it gets into the project's going to take more money than we'd originally budgeted for it, that investment group's going to have to sign off on the fact that, yeah, we really do want to invest that much more money into this particular system. So we're trying to put a lot more management controls into the way we approach it. The other thing that is really important, I think, the fact that ALMRS took so long in trying to develop the software meant that what hardware we'd bought along the way was obsolete by the time we got to deployment. And so we're trying to get those into better sync. But we're also not trying to do so much of a specialty software development, but what we are doing, we're doing it in a modular fashion so that we develop a piece, test it. If it works, you know, we're going to move on with it. But if it doesn't work, we haven't lost so much of an investment. So the modular approach, I think, is very important to where we're headed now. But, you know, it was really a lesson that was hard to learn, but I think well worth the effort to get through and to make the decision we were going to take the heat for saying no.
What's the Bureau's architecture project?
Well, I think that's the backbone for where we're headed in terms of in technology in the Bureau of Land Management. If you will, I think of the architecture as being the roadmap for where we're headed. It has a piece in it in which any time that we're going to do something, we have to go back and look at the work process. How is the work really done? What's the information you need to do that work? And so the architecture lays out a process by which we'll look at the work, describe the data that we need from to do the work, and then this lays out a framework for the kind of software that we're going to deploy and the kind of hardware that we're going to use so that we don't have, as we are now operating, two or three, four operating systems. We'll have a single operating system, and we'll have a suite of software instead of Bureau employees out just going out and buying software all over the place, which is both expensive in terms of licensing to maintain the different software, but also costs us a lot in terms of maintenance. So the architecture is bringing us back to some specific Bureau parameters for data, for work processes, for software applications, and for the hardware that we're going to use to deploy the software. And that roadmap is one that we're really going to hold to. We're not going to deploy software that doesn't meet our architecture. And as a result of that, I think that we'll, as I said, have technology within the Bureau that is much more affordable to us and, moreover, will be much more accessible and usable to our employees.
What kind of steps does BLM take to manage costs?
Well, we have a very aggressive cost management system. As you, I'm sure, know, VASAB a couple of years ago dictated that government agencies have a cost management system. And we looked at that very seriously. My previous experience had been that as we had tried to improve our work processes, it was very difficult for us to cost out how much it was costing us to do the work at that point in time. And so I was very interested in this on a personal level because of that experience. And so we've really gone into activity-based costing within the Bureau. And as a result of that, we've actually created a information system so that you can have information about how our GPRA goal areas are costing us, how much our work processes are costing us, and how much that pieces of each work process are costing us. And we have that on every available to every employee from their desktop. They can look at how much it's costing them to do oil and gas leases as compared to another state or to another part of their state. And we are trying to get people to look at how they're spending the money. And we're beginning to budget. Part of our budget decision is who's spending the money more effectively. Where could we spend the money in one state and get maybe more leases done because they do it much more efficiently than another state will? Mostly we've tried to get people to look at the cost management data and say, now here are some questions we need to ask. Why is it costing my field office so much more to do that piece of work than it is another office? Now, there may be very reasonable explanations. Their environmental impact statement may have been a $3 million impact statement versus a $500,000 impact statement in a neighboring field office. But we want them to ask those questions. Why is it costing us so much? Where is it that we can save some money? Because we recognize that every dollar we can save in doing the work, we have that available to do something else. So I would say that we have, you know, one of the best systems around in terms of making that information available real time to every employee. As an example of how we've used it, we had in our Wild Horse and Burro program, when we first started looking at our cost data, we recognized that we were spending almost a quarter of all of our program dollars between the time that the horse was gathered off of the range and the time that the horse was adopted. I mean, we were feeding them through a quarter of our program. And we were spending an average, of about 90 days feeding them. So I asked the program, I said, well, how many days do we need to prepare the horse from time we gather it to adoption? The horse program didn't like this, but I viewed it as sort of our L.L. Bean. We have a horse. We want to deliver the horse to the customer. It takes us some time to make sure they get their shots, that they're healthy and all that kind of thing. So that takes us a little over 30 days. So I said, okay, let's see if we can get down to 30 days. And, we went through the cost data and looked at how much it was costing State A versus State B to do those. And we started allocating our budget on what was sort of a median range that we thought they really needed based on that data. And that caused a lot of internal heartburn, believe me, when they didn't just get the amount that they'd gotten the year before or that amount plus. And what was happening is they were actually taking program dollars off of other program areas to support the horses. And we said, okay, we're just not going to let you go do a gather anytime you want to. You know, we're going to coordinate our gathers with when we want to do our adoptions so that we can do it in a more efficient manner. We did that, and that certainly improved our cost. But we didn't have enough money in the program to get to our ultimate goal. So we looked at it and we said, you know, we're doing better in terms of cost, but we're still not meeting our strategic objective. So what do we need to do to meet our strategic objective? And the Wild Horse and Burro people went back, looked at the numbers, and they started looking at it. And they were absolutely aghast that, in fact, we could bring horses off to the management level that was appropriate for that area and put them in what we think of as long-term care, actually pasturing them until we can get them adopted. And over time, we can get the number of horses down to where we need them to be on the range, and it will actually cost us less money. And so we took this business case to the department. We took this business case to the Congress, and Congress has actually appropriated us $9 million more dollars over the last year to begin getting those horses down to the number we want to have them on the range. And that strategic plan and strategic approach has really been driven by the cost information. Had we not had the cost information, we wouldn't have known how that we could have gotten to where we want to go, and I certainly don't think we would have been as persuasive in terms of making the case about our approach. And so we're just really excited about how that this cost data is beginning to help us to manage the programs.
We'll be back with more of the Business of Government Hour in just a minute.